to another edition of the MMA Torch podcast. It is Thursday, April 14th, 2016. We are 2 days out from the UFC on Fox 19 card from Tampa, which looks very different than the card that was scheduled just a month ago, at least on the main card, as two of the fights scheduled are not there anymore. One with a much lesser opponent, in the Khabib Nurmagomedov-Daryl Horcher fight, and the loss of Lyoto Machida versus Dan Henderson this week, which we will get into all of that. Joining me tonight is MMA Torch senior columnist Sean Ennis and MMA Torch columnist Rich Hansen. Guys, we had a fight last Sunday, UFC
we
Fight
did?
Night 86.
I'm sorry.
And there are fights this weekend. There are fights next weekend, and there are a bunch of fights coming in May and June. We'll get to a whole bunch of stuff tonight. So,
yay.
To the fights.
No, that was the last promotional tour.
No, that is this promotional tour.
I lose track. There are more promotional tours now than there really should be fight cards.
Yeah.
Listen, don't correct me on my promotional tours, okay?
Okay, nutsack.
It's the and that's how we start tonight. Welcome, everyone. Rich.
There's a pall hanging over us. What can I say?
Junior Dos Santos had probably his best performance since 2012 on Sunday. And it was not an entire return to form, but I think a very encouraging and positive step forward for him compared to what we've seen in the last few years. Do you think that there's enough of a spark there with what he did on Sunday to make another title run at this point?
Well, in last week's aborted podcast, I made it pretty clear that I thought Rothwell was going to knock him out and do so kind of handily, failing to keep in mind the fact, based solely on Dos Santos being done, because obviously prime Dos Santos is better than prime Rothwell, always was, always will be. So I didn't see this coming. I was surprised. Even in retrospect, I missed if Dos Santos isn't ability, but it's not like when he fought Alistair Overeem, it's not like Overeem is a whole lot more mobile than Rothwell either. So I don't understand how this happened, but I'm more than willing to accept the fact that something has changed in Dos Santos for whatever reason. When he wasn't able to get off against Overeem, when he looked decent at best against Miocic in a controversial victory. Yeah. The mobility that he showed against Rothwell is what he's going to continue to need to show, and whether it will translate against Cain Velasquez if they ever meet again, or somebody who can move better than Rothwell, that's the big question. I broke the fight down completely wrong and didn't take into account the fact that even if he is done, he's still 10 times quicker and has much better angles, much better footwork, and more variety and even in his kickboxing than Rothwell has. So I'm open to the possibility that he could become top three, top four in that range in the division in the UFC, but I need to see it again against somebody who moves better than Rothwell does before I'm willing to go, full hog on Dos Santos as a, title contender type guy.
The footwork and movement that he had on Sunday was just so apparent compared to what we'd seen in the last several fights, and that was such a huge factor in him looking as good as he did on Sunday.
I want to see him fight Arlovsky, and I'm sorry to step on your toes.
No,
sir,
it's fine.
But I was racking my brain trying to think of someone with more mobility than Rothwell that would be right at that level, because it's been a while. I mean, if you look, other than the Velasquez fights, Overeem's not overly mobile. Miocic, he's a little more athletic, obviously, than Rothwell, but he is also a bit mechanical. Mark Hunt, a lot of things, mobile ain't one of them. Frank Mir, not very mobile. Shane Carwin, not very mobile. Roy Nelson, really not mobile. You got to go back. I mean, we're into 2010 till he, other than the Velasquez fights, and we saw how those turned out, to see someone who's even close to the mobility level that he exhibited against Rothwell. So Andrei Arlovsky, while not as mobile and intelligent of a fighter as Dos Santos showed on Sunday, is the fight that I want to see. And if he beats Arlovsky in the same, you know, with the same style that he had against Rothwell, then yes, I will be convinced that he has what it takes to make a run. That's the fight I want to see next.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that was standing out as a negative for Dos Santos in his last few years was the fact that he let himself get backed up to the cage consistently and let himself get cut off and was not able to get out of harm's way and to get out of that clinch on the cage that really hurt him against Cain Velasquez. It was one of the factors in the Miocic fight where he was more plodding, he wasn't moving as well, and was not as convincing with his offense. And it's the same type of style that he had against Overeem, as you mentioned. And there was a very, very significant difference in the game plan that he employed against Ben Rothwell. And not only was it a lot more effective, he looked a lot more energized and less lethargic, slow, done than he did in his last several fights. Sean, what was your take on the fight as it played out Sunday, and now looking back on it a few days later as to what it means for Dos Santos and his future?
Well, it was apparent pretty quickly in the fight that if Dos Santos was going to be able to move like this for the majority of the fight, then he was going to have his way with Rothwell, and that's kind of the way it worked out there. And, you know, as to whether he is primed for another run, you know, I would like to see it again, like Rich says. I don't think that it necessarily matters whom he fights, because if he's moving like he moved on Sunday, there's not a lot of guys at heavyweight, if any, that are going to be that mobile anyway, besides, you know, your Cain Velasquez and that realm of guys. And really, you know, at heavyweight, how many fights do you need to put together in order to be a contender? Not, you know, it's not too many, especially with a resume like Dos Santos.
Unless you're Ben Rothwell, you need to put 8 fights together.
Obviously. But with a guy like Dos Santos, with his resume, even with the slide that he was on since 2012, it's not gonna take a whole lot to get him back for title shots, especially as long as Fabricio Werdum is the champion, since Dos Santos beat Werdum in his first fight in the UFC. So, yeah, I think he's, obviously the line to the title shot is not, you know, one person long at this point, but I think with another fight or two, it's very possible, plausible that Dos Santos ends up with another title shot. I think provided that the champion is not Cain Velasquez, they're going to do Dos Santos Velasquez 4 anytime soon.
I think Dos Santos winning is good for the UFC in that it clears out any murkiness in the title picture. I think it's clear that Alistair Overeem with a win over Andrei Arlovsky is probably next in line, because Werdum is fighting a week after the Arlovsky Overeem fight, and Cain Velasquez is not fighting Travis Brown until the summer. So you take out having Ben Rothwell be a factor in that conversation, because he was very close to being in that conversation and would have had an argument for a title fight of his own had he beaten Dos Santos himself. So now I think you were looking at Fabricio Werdum, if he beats Stipe Miocic, facing Alistair Overeem if Overeem beats Arlovsky. I don't think the UFC would have re-signed Overeem for the money that they're very likely paying him if a title fight was not going to be coming sooner rather than later. And it makes sense, because Velasquez didn't need an immediate rematch given how that fight went against Werdum last year. So if he beats Travis Brown, you know, he's right back in the mix for facing the winner of Werdum and Overeem with one more win himself. So Dos Santos, at best, is looking at early 2017 to late 2017, if that's going to be in the cards for him, and obviously that's going to entail at least two more wins to get there. And I think that's, again, it's less than one would need in many of the other divisions, but it's probably just right for him at heavyweight if he can perform as well as he did Sunday night.
But even then, it shows just how far he has fallen, that he still needs as many dominoes to fall in the right order as need to fall in order for him to be at the top of the list. And this comes from a guy that has not lost two fights in a row. I mean, let's keep in mind, since Cain Velasquez starched him the first time, he's alternated losses and wins and doesn't have two losses in a row since. But he also doesn't have two wins in a row, which, you know, as Ben Rothwell will tell you, is a good start if you're going to get up to that level.
Yeah. Sunday's card was the UFC's debut in Zagreb, Croatia. And they went with what was kind of a risky card-building strategy in putting five heavyweight fights on the card, including four straight, to finish it out. We got the...
They went all UFC one. The heavyweight card. Come on, Jamie, acknowledge my references. Turd.
Well, we got the poor end of heavyweight action in the just overly long and not good Timothy Johnson-Marcin Tybura fight. Francis Ngannou looked solid against Curtis Blaydes and swelled up his eye to the point that the doctor stopped the fight. And then Derek Lewis, after a bad 4.5 minutes against Gabriel Gonzaga, scored a late flurry to take the knockout in the co-main event. Also on the Fight Pass prelims, Jared Cannonier knocked out Cyril Asker. So lots of heavyweight fights on this card and a little bit of action. Lewis beating Gonzaga, it makes him another name that could be creeping up the ranks, and I have to think Gonzaga is probably done in the UFC at this point, given how bad his fight with Konstantin Arokin was and how bad the first 4.5 minutes of this fight was before he got knocked out. Sean, any thoughts on the heavyweight action from Sunday's event?
Derek Lewis continues to be a frightening person. I was not as down on this fight as you guys were. I thought it was a little more illuminating with, you know, Gabriel Gonzaga is legitimately dangerous on the ground, and Derek Lewis was able to basically neutralize him, wasn't really in any danger at any point, despite Gonzaga being in pretty good position and being a real threat down there.
The escape from Mount was really impressive. I will give Lewis that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I thought that was good, and you know that right hand they knocked him out with was just ridiculous. So I did enjoy that. Other than
does
that,
does he remind you
a little
of Brett Rogers minus the whole, you know, scum of the earth thing?
A little bit.
Yeah. A little bit.
Kind
little
of
bit.
A skill.
A little bit more. Yeah,
holes in his game.
Technical though.
Fun when he's doing what he's supposed to do.
He definitely does have holes. I think he is a little more technical than Brett Rogers. But yeah, definitely there are some similarities there. As for the Curtis Blaydes and Francis last name, that was those are guys. Thank you. Both those guys could be a danger down the road. They both look pretty good. Blaydes, of course, grew a third eye, so that was unfortunate. But all in all, you know, a card littered with heavyweights is always fun, and this was no exception, I thought.
How about the referee in that fight trying to argue with the doctor? No, he said he could fight. He could see. Let him.
Well, in his defense, you know, if you can feel how many fingers the doctor has up, you should be able to keep fighting.
That was an excellent move. Rich, anything else to add on the heavyweight fights from this card?
No.
Okay. Jan Blachowicz
integrity
beat
of the journalistic
Igor Prokrajic. Marina Moroz beat Kristina Stanciu. That was the rest of the main card. On Fox Sports 1, the prelims were a lot more entertaining than the main card was prior to the main event. Zach Cummings had a really impressive victory over the previously undefeated Nicholas Dalby. Alejandro Perez forced Ian Entwistle to submit to punches when Entwistle couldn't get a leg lock and left himself completely open to getting hit repeatedly in essentially half guard. Mirabek Taisimov is a very, 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 very good fighter at 155 pounds, and he needs to get a top 15 opponent next. I want to see what he can do up the ranks there. And then finally, Damian Stasiak defeated Philippe Pejic. Sean, I know you caught most of this card. Any thoughts on the prelim action and especially the performances from Cummings and Taisimov and the controversy in the Entwistle Perez fight with the greasing allegation in the middle of the fight?
That was funny.
Yeah, that was funny.
He should have had a point taken away from him, by the way. If you're going to accuse someone of greasing and it's BS, then you should lose a point. No, I'm serious.
You're not wrong.
I'm
really
serious. I know you're I'm not wrong.
I thought the star coming out of the prelims was Taisimov. He looks just like another terrifying guy, and I want to see him fight at all times. So that was great. He would get tired eventually. The Entwistle fight was pretty hilarious. He just looked so confused as to why he couldn't get the tap out. You know, and it seemed like he had a couple of those heel hooks in pretty deep, and Perez just was not having it. And
on that note, if you think a guy is greasing and you're accusing him of that, and you continue to go after the very thing that is already going to be hard to get, if that is true,
seems like a bad
it's
idea.
Kind of on you.
Yeah, if we can quote Luca Fury here, then that means he's a flake. And just on Taisimov, can we slow the roll a little bit and realize that he just beat like the 200th best lightweight in the world?
No.
And maybe instead of jumping him from there to Dustin Poirier, maybe there's a step in the middle that he could hit first.
I'm not saying Taisimov's going to be the lightweight champion. I'm just saying he's a terrifying individual, and
fine.
I enjoy watching.
I wasn't even referring
to
you.
Just
I'll get
let me
you
keep
next.
Driving the hype train. Let me keep driving the hype train. You get on and
yeah,
have
you
a
write
good time,
something,
right?
And then you can train whatever you want. But can't he fight someone like the winner of Paul Felder, Josh Berkman, outside of the top 15? But at least someone like sure. Him in range before we jump him from from playing the Vikings to playing the 85 Bears.
God,
can't we find a middle ground?
I sense a lot of misplaced anger here tonight.
Can't he
misplaced? No, I think that's perfectly placed, Sean.
Oh, not with you.
I have no anger. I'm enjoying every second of this. But can he play the Minnesota Wild before he plays, the 16th best team and something like that? Am I wrong? Just tell me I'm wrong, Jamie. Tell me that Gleason Tebow wouldn't be a better option for him now than, Edson Barboza.
Well, Gleason Tebow could be a better option for him in 2 years when he comes back, but...
That would be an easy win right now. Nick Lentz.
I would watch Taisimov and Edson Barboza all day, every day.
Ross Pearson. Tons of guys.
Well, I mean, that's the thing
like
with the lightweight
he's an
division.
Amateur
are...
flyweight, Jamie, who is going to go from fighting in a house to fighting Demetrius Johnson for the title? Okay, there's a middle ground.
Fair enough.
Thank you. Score one for me. Don't you love when I reference inside jokes on podcasts that don't actually record properly? You want an inside joke? There's an inside joke, people.
Yeah, speaking of which, it's a shame that I didn't get recorded on record saying that Junior Dos Santos was definitely going to win that fight and was not done yet.
Oh, I'll vouch for it. You said part of that. You absolutely said Junior Dos Santos.
You used the man's name. That is correct.
Yep.
I was the only one that said I would not be shocked if he won.
That is a very different thing than saying he's back and he was going to win this fight.
Well, listen, you know exactly what I meant when I said that.
Well, then maybe you should
articulate that better next time,
Thank
John.
Thank you. Four syllable word. I like that. We going to do a show here, Jamie?
Saturday night, the UFC is back on Fox.
No.
Eight fights coming to network television as the prelims will air on Fox as well. Four fights on Fight Pass. The main card looks very different than it did just a couple of weeks ago. It was supposed to be headlined by Khabib Nurmagomedov's return against Tony Ferguson. Ferguson, of course, had to pull out. So Glover Teixeira and Rashad Evans are in the main event. The co-main was going to be Lyoto Machida against Dan Henderson. Well, when USADA showed up to Lyoto Machida's door and he wrote down all of the stuff he was taking in his supplements, well, it turns out one of those was not allowed.
I'll tell you the wildest theory that I saw on a message board about what he popped for before his admission.
Yes, I want to hear it.
That people were talking about the fact that he drinks his own urine, that maybe that screwed up with his metabolism and kept, you know, that screwed up his system so that things that were in his system stayed in there longer because he kept drinking his own urine. Let it
go.
What
you're saying is there is no limit to the dumbitude of people on message boards.
Correct.
Yes, that seems accurate. Machida listed all of his supplements, and he was taking something that was available over the counter called 7-Keto-DHEA, I believe is the substance in question. And he just listed everything that he was taking. And this is where I believe his excuse, not to say that ignorance is an acceptable excuse in this situation, but it doesn't seem like it was something he was knowingly trying to skirt the rules and cheat with, because he just flat out said, here's everything that I'm taking, and disclosed it on the form, and that particular substance was on the ban list. What his mistake was taking supplements without actually checking the banned list and whether or not he could take that supplement.
What I like is on his Instagram confession, he said that it's recently banned.
Oh, yeah, he said it was banned in 2016.
It's been banned since at least 2012.
Yes, it has been banned since before the London Olympics. And
now, compared to, like, you know, how long it's been since Jesus was put on the cross, it's very recently banned. He has a point.
But
or for Sean, since Joseph Smith found the gold plates.
More recent than both of those things.
Yes.
that's the thing right now with the supplements, though, is there are a lot of people and athletes who think that just because it's available over the counter and they're not getting it from some shady dealer means that they can take it. That's not the case with a lot of supplements. There are
just
a lot of things.
Just because she wants to sleep with you doesn't mean you ain't going to get hurt in the end.
But obviously, we've seen even with the Yoel Romero situation that there's stuff off label in supplements. But when it's already listed and you don't check, it took two seconds to type that into Google and the WADA list and find it. It would have been real simple. And any athlete taking any supplements, you should be checking every ingredient that is on those to make sure that they're not on the banned list if you are trying to compete fairly without breaking the rules, so to speak.
Or even a more better idea. How about don't
more
take
better.
Supplements?
More better?
Yes, more better.
Mm-hmm. More better.
This is why he doesn't write
a
anymore.
A more better idea.
Mm-hmm. This is why we don't let him This is why we don't let him write anymore. The editing process adds like a week to posting his stuff, and then it's all out of date.
As I said, a more better idea. Don't take supplements.
I think
what you meant was that you have more better ideas, as in a volume of better ideas.
I meant what I said, and I said what I meant.
Hey, I'm trying to take the words that you said and actually make them make sense in, you know, English.
There is no one listening to these words that did not understand them.
Except Jamie. Jamie let it go. Anyways. The people are going to miss this. The folks.
Yeah. God, so, with that fight off of Saturday's card, Rose Namajunas.
May I just say that losing Machida versus Henderson makes the card better?
Yeah, it does.
I was just going to get there, yeah.
No one needed to see that fight again. It was bad the first time it happened. It didn't need to happen again. Although there's some real laughable irony in Dan Henderson calling Lyoto Machida POS for admitting to that.
To be fair, Henderson did his TRT when it was legal. He never hid by it. As soon as they banned it, he stopped it. These are just facts. I'm not defending, but factually.
And Machida took a supplement. Like he didn't go to a doctor. Machida took a supplement. He didn't go to a doctor to get a prescription.
Right, but it's not as bad as, say, Hector Lombard, you know?
Yeah. Well, neither are. It's just really funny.
If there's a fight I want to see less than Henderson versus Machida, anyways.
Yeah, Dan Henderson will now be fighting Hector Lombard at UFC 199, but we'll get to that card in a little bit.
Bathroom break.
So who's Saturday's card.
Another one to throw a punch first longest. Is that good English?
Saturday's card. This is what we're looking at on Fox. Main card, Glover Teixeira against Rashad Evans in the main event. Rose Namajunas, Tisha Torres, 2 in the co-main event. Habib Nurmagomedov against Daryl Horcher.
Horcher.
Yeah, whatever. Cub Swanson against Hakim Diaz.
Hockey season, it's Horcher.
And the prelims on Fox, Beneil Dariush against Michael Chiesa in probably the best fight on the card. Betch Kohea against Raquel Pennington. Court McGee against Santiago Ponzinibbio, Drew Dober against Islam Makhachev. Then on UFC Fight Pass, John Dodson is moving back up to bantamweight to fight Manny Gambarian. Randy Brown fights Michael Graves. Olawale Bangbos fights Cesar Fajeya. And Eliseu Zaleski dos Santos fights Omari Akhmedov. Rich.
I kind of like that Ferreira fight versus Bangbos for what it's worth.
Yeah, it's solid.
I like that fight, but for a buried on Fight Pass fight, that's a good fight.
I think Mutanch is going to get knocked out again. It's kind of seems to be what he's been relegated to. His chin's kind of gone. So
who?
Fajera.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Is probably his Mutanch.
Yeah. I just didn't hear you. There was a little hiccup on the broadband. Bite me. I was busy listening to myself talk while you were trying to talk. My bad.
Yeah, well.
Now you know how it feels. No, I'm saying I talk too much, Jamie. I'm trying to throw you a bone here.
Hey, Sean.
Yeah.
Oh, don't feed to him.
Does Rashad Evans have a title fight in his future? Simple yes or no answer is fine.
No.
I say yes, because he will eventually be in Bellator.
I wouldn't call that a title.
Hey, works for Ben Henderson.
Okay, with no as the answer. Can he beat Glover Teixeira?
Not legitimately.
So...
in a bad decision, yes.
Okay. Rich?
I give Evans more of a shot than Sean does, and I still haven't completely figured out the way I think this is going to play, but it wouldn't shock me if Evans can figure out how to get inside and kind of do in a much less impressive version of what he did to Chael Sonnen, you know, get him on the cage. Now, I'm not predicting a 4-minute slaughter finish, but I mean, if he can get him on the cage, if he can use his leverage, if he can avoid the big shots, he can ugly up a fight with just about anybody.
Yeah.
That said, Teixeira is very dangerous, but I mean, I clearly see the path on how Evans is going to do it. It's just Evans's path to victory is much harder than Teixeira's, and Teixeira's has more paths to that easier victory. But I mean, you know, at the way the line is, I think is, you know, I mean, I'm picking Teixeira. All right. I mean, don't get me wrong on that. There's just too many ways that he can win it. But I think Evans is a live dog in this fight. I would feel better about it if he hadn't been as inactive as he has been over the last couple of years. But, you know, -190 or +190. I think if I were, you know, degenerate gamble pig, that's where I'd be putting my money.
Yeah, fair enough. When Rose Namajunas and Tisha Torres fought for the first time, Namajunas was in just her third career fight. Torres, they were both just their third career fights, actually. since that fight, which Torres won by decision in Invicta, I feel like Nama Yunus has improved in more aspects of her game than Torres has. Now,
correct.
Torres has the type of stifling game plan and skill set that can still have an effect against Nama Yunus. It was the type of fight that she faced against Carla Esparza as well. But Nama Yunus has more ways to hurt Torres and win this fight. If she can finish, if it's going to end, it's going to be on Nama Yunus' terms. If it goes to decision, it's going to be either a toss-up or Torres will have effectively worked her game plan on this one. I think Nama Yunus has brought her game up to the point where she can win this fight and give Torres her first official loss. But Torres is a grinder, a tough fighter to put away, a tough fighter to look good against. And I think that is going to have an effect on Saturday as well. I think this is going to be a close and competitive fight. I think Nama Yunus wins, but it's not going to be an easy one. Rich, thoughts on that matchup?
I love the contrast between the two fighters. That Torres is undefeated and has never finished an opponent. Nama Yunus is 4-2 in her career, and every single one of her fights that hasn't been against Tiesha Torres has not gone to a decision.
Yeah.
I don't know what it means. Well, sure I do. It means that Nama Yunus is going to be, you know, much riskier out there and is more dangerous. And if I'm picking a fight and I see equal talent levels, I'm always going to go for the fighter that's going to try and finish the fight as often as possible. Because if you're planning to win a fight by decision, which clearly Torres or Tiesha Torres is, that means that she has to implement what she's, you know, her game plan for 15 minutes. Whereas Rose Namajunas doesn't have to worry about 15 minutes at any moment. You know, she could be the one finishing the fight. I mean, I understand that all of her finishes have been by submission, you know, no knockouts, but that's not unusual in this weight class. I think the first fight was an outlier against Tiesha Torres. I think Nama Yunus should be a heavy favorite in this fight. I'm not at all a fan of watching Tiesha Torres fights. I'm not a fan of the competition that she has fought, short of Rose Namajunas. But let's remember that this was, you know, almost 3 years ago now, and you know, Rose was barely 21 years old at that time. I'm really on Namajunas in this fight. I wouldn't be surprised if she finishes Torres. Torres hasn't lost, not or hasn't been finished ever in her career, not because of her toughness level, but because the best opponent that she's fought outside of the Rose fight is probably, you know, Angela Hill or Angela Magana or Felice Herrick. You know, she hasn't fought anybody other than the Rose fight, which, again, she won. I get that, but she's stagnated and maybe become better at what she was already good at. Rose Namajunas has gotten better at multiple facets of her game, and she, Torres, doesn't have. Wouldn't surprise me at all if she finishes this in the first or second round.
Sean?
Yeah, I think you guys pretty much summed it up. I don't have too much else to say about this one. I like Thug Rose in this one, and but it could, you know, like you said, if Torres is able to implement her game plan, it'll give her some problems, but I do like Nama Yunus' chances.
Yeah, but if Torres makes one mistake, she's in for a world of trouble. And,
yep.
You know, that's, and if Rose makes mistakes, Torres doesn't have the game to capitalize on it. The more I think about it, the more I have a real difficulty seeing how Torres is going to be effective.
Yeah, fair enough. Short answer, is Nurmagomedov losing for the first time on Saturday night? Sean?
No.
Rich?
Well, I consider the... No.
Cubs.
Can we just say, though, real props to Jorge for taking the fight?
Absolutely.
On short notice.
Absolutely.
He's absolutely admitted that when he went on Twitter and called out for the fight, that he wasn't expecting to get the fight. He just wanted his name to be out there so that if they move someone else from a different fight on this card or, you know, a nearby card, that his name would be, you know, in Joe Silva's mind to replace the person who moved up to fight Nurmagomedov.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe this is, you know, the best intentions are going to kick him in the ass. But, you know, if the intentions don't, Nurmagomedov will.
Cub Swanson's returning to action for the first time in a year. Hasn't fought. It's been a year. April 18th, 2015 was his last fight.
That's like less than a year.
Was that when he got smoked by Holloway?
2 days. Yes, that was when he got smoked by Holloway. It's been on Saturday it will have been 364 days. Thank you, Leap Year.
That's like 52 weeks. That's like less than a year.
So not almost a year then.
Well, depending on how you round.
Like just barely, not quite a year.
Well, you know, maybe more than a year on like Mars.
So like almost, it's like almost a year.
I went backwards. Maybe less. Mercury.
It's more than a year on Venus.
I'll give you this one, Jamie. We'll call it a year.
Is anyone still listening? Probably not.
I mean.
Cub Swanson has lost two straight. He got just destroyed by Frankie Edgar to snap a six-fight winning streak and followed that up with the loss to Holloway. Hakran Diaz has won three of his five fights in the UFC, his two losses to Nick Lentz and Ricardo Lamas, both by decision. So Diaz, a very durable fighter. He's only lost three times in his entire career. He entered the UFC with a 21-1 record. Again, not easy to put away. Swanson is typically best when he can outwork his opponents, outstrike them, knock them out. He's done that to some very good fighters. There's every possibility he can be the man to hand Diaz the first stoppage loss of his career. I don't know that it's going to happen. That said, Swanson still, even without a stoppage, has the type of game that can be effective enough to score points and win a decision. I think this one's going to be a fairly close fight for 15 minutes. Rich, any thoughts on how this one plays out to close up or to open up the main card?
Well, it completely depends on how cooked Cub Swanson is or is not.
Yep.
I mean, we know exactly what we're going to get from Diaz. He's consistent. We know what he can do. We know what he can't do. Finish. Swanson, we know when he's at his peak. He can knock out George Rubin, Ross Pearson, and Charles Oliveira in Toronto. Holy shit, I'm surprised Oliveira's gotten off his butt yet, you know? But, you know, let's just slow down here a little and realize that there's no shame in getting slaughtered by Frankie Edgar, and there's no shame in getting slaughtered by Max Holloway, all right? So does that prove that he's done because he looked awful against, you know, two of the five best featherweights in the world? No, it just shows where his ceiling is. I am more willing to believe that Cub Swanson looked like hell against those guys because of those guys, as opposed to just he's cooked.
Yeah.
So I'm going to use the same logic, minus the whole age thing in the Swanson fight that I did in the Rose Namajunas fight, and I'm going to say that I think Cub's going to knock him out.
Sean?
Yeah, I'm actually going in the same direction. I think this is all. It's a tough fight to call because of Swanson's layoff, mainly, and because of how he looked in his last couple of fights. Because, you know, like Rich said, those two fighters are, you know, there's no shame in losing to those guys, especially for Cub Swanson, who has pretty significant wins at featherweight over, you know, he beat Jeremy Stephens, he beat Dustin Poirier, Charles Oliveira is a beast, he beat Charles Oliveira. So this is not, you know, this is not a guy who racked up a couple of lucky wins and then got plowed when he got to the elite level of the division. So I do think Swanson has the right kind of game to beat Hakran Diaz. I like this matchmaking a lot. And I think Swanson's going to end up getting the win, but at the same time, you know, this is the kind of fight that should show us where Swanson is, because Diaz is not going to go in there and, you know, take his foot off the gas for a couple of minutes. And he's not going to be the kind of guy who is, going to go in there and blitz him either. You know, it's going to be, Diaz is going to be there the whole time, and Swanson's going to have to implement his game plan if he wants to win. So it's a good fight to see, Cub Swanson come back on.
And let's just take a second here to recognize that Cub Swanson has faced a murderer's row. Let's look. I mean,
yeah.
He lost his first fight ever, okay? And then after that, his other six losses were Jens Pulver, in 35, which, you know, that was a fight Jens Pulver's winning 100 times out of 100, if you just think about the circumstances of him going to the WEC and all that. Jose Aldo in 8 seconds. Whether you lose to Jose Aldo in 8 seconds or in 8 minutes or in 8 rounds, no shame in that. Chad Mendes didn't
finish. Not to mention, that was one of Jose Aldo's best highlights, which is saying something.
Yes, exactly. Chad Mendes didn't finish him. Ricardo Lamas beat him on the prelims on that Fox show. And then after beating guys like Oliveira and Dustin Poirier and Jeremy Stevens, who was, you know, a revitalized Jeremy Stevens, then losing to Frankie Edgar and Max Holloway. I mean, he's lost to the best of the best, the cream of the crop. So, I mean, the more I think about it, I'm willing to say that, Hakran Diaz ain't at that level. And that would be the outlier. That would be the loss that tells you, okay, he's losing to a lot lower level of guys now.
Yeah. Fairly rapid fire here on the prelims. Beneil Dariush on a 5-fight winning streak, taking on Michael Chiesa off a submission win over Jim Miller. Rich, does Dariush continue his run? Does Chiesa take this one?
I think Dariush does. I mean, Chiesa is better at taking a guy's back than just about anybody I've ever seen, but Dariush's jits is so high level that I think he can keep Chiesa off of his back, and he has more ways at that point to finish than just, you know, rear naked off the back. I think Dariush is going to finish him second round, maybe third round in that range.
Sean?
And he's better on the feet, too.
Yeah, I'm with Rich on this one. I love this fight. Chiesa could definitely do it, but I like Dariush.
Yep. Same on this end. Betch Kohea, in her first fight since losing to Ronda Rousey, fights Raquel Pennington. This is more the step up she needed after her win over Shayna Baszler than going right to Ronda Rousey. And I think Betch Kohea gets beat by Raquel Pennington Saturday. Sean?
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. This is kind of where we get to see where Betch Kohea actually is, what her level is, and I think she's a notch lower than Pennington here.
Rich?
Considering how tight Pennington was with Holly Holm, and considering how, shall we say, loose Correa was with Ronda Rousey, the UFC, UFC... got the money out of Correa that they're going to get. Now they're going to use her to build up people that they think have some potential. Raquel Pennington has some potential. It will be on full display on Saturday night.
I actually really kind of like the Court McGee-Santiago Ponzinibbio fight. Sneaky solid in the welterweight division. McGee, not spectacular in anything, but very, very capable on the feet, and he's solid on the ground. He's decent in the clinch. Ponzinibbio has been... fairly entertaining throughout his time in the UFC thus far. I think this is going to be a competitive fight. Sean, thoughts there?
I actually like Ponzinibbio in this fight. I think he's going to be able to have a more dynamic game than Court McGee is going to have. McGee, I have not been impressed with lately, as impressed as I was earlier. And I think Ponzinibbio is going to go in there and put a hurting on him.
Rich?
It's been 5 years since McGee's been in a fight that has gone to a finish, almost 6. So if nothing else, we know how long the fight is going to take. So you can plan your day around that. It's really pretty simple. Are we going to see the Court McGee that beat Robert Whittaker, or are we going to see the Court McGee that lost to Nick Ring? You know, I think I know what we're going to get out of Ponzinibbio. I don't know what we're going to get out of Court McGee. In that case, I'm going to go with the more consistent fighter in this instance and say Ponzinibbio will win, and I'll probably fall asleep before the fight's done.
Habib Nurmagomedov's teammate Islam Makhachev looked great in his debut, taking out Leo Kuntz at UFC 187, and then he got knocked out in his second fight against Adriano Martins. The first loss of his career, but it came in less than 2 minutes. I still think he is a clearly better fighter than Drew Dober. Dober's one highlight in the UFC was a surprise submission win over Jamie Varner. And the decision he had over Scott Holtzman at UFC 195 was not in a very good fight. He had his only other win overturned due to a failed drug test. Actually, no, sorry, he lost that fight. That was a no contest because of the failed drug test of Leandro Silva. He's also been submitted by Efrain Escudero, and he lost to Nick Hein and Sean Spencer in the octagon. I think Makhachev rolls in this one and gets back on track after the Martins loss. Any dissension there, Sean, Rich?
Nope.
John Dodson, Manny Gambarian. Dodson roll, Dodson fail in his return to bantamweight. Anyway.
I think the spread is out of whack. Gambarian is underrated. Dodson hasn't fought in a little while, and he's back at a weight. He wasn't a big flyweight to begin with, okay? And now he's going to be really small, and that'll make his, you know, knockout that much more impressive. Don't get me wrong, but I don't like people saying Gamburian has absolutely no chance. I mean, putting him at close to plus 500, I think nuts. You know, he's, you know, that Gamburian's going to be competitive until he gets knocked out.
Sean?
Yeah, I give Gamburian no chance here. John Dodson, you know, and that may be a dumb take because Dodson does tend to have periods where he doesn't do anything.
Correct.
And Gambarian, yeah. And that's the thing. I should say, if Dodson decides to fight for the entirety of the fight, then he will win easily.
Dodson's a bit of a Hector Lombard in that sense.
He is. He is. And it's very strange because he's so fast and so he's so explosive when he decides to do something, you know, because, you know, Lombard can be plotting even when he's good. You know, whereas Dodson, if he's on his game, is moving around the cage and he's doing great things. But if he's deciding not to fight there and doesn't really do anything, so if he does that for long stretches here and it goes to decision, Gambarian's got a pretty good chance to win this fight. If he decides to throw out some offense, I think he wins it pretty easily.
I mean, John, you'd think Dodson would have learned after his first title shot against Demetrius Johnson, where he won the first two rounds handily and then just turned it off in the third round. Yeah. And then he couldn't turn it back on.
Yeah. I don't really have anything to say on the final three fight pass
Good.
Cards.
Anything Let's get Matt on. We'll make Matt break those down. There's no BJ Penn versus Ben Askren on the last three fights there. I got the references in.
Mentioning the flyweight division with John Dodson, he's moving up because he lost twice to champion Demetrius Mighty Mouse Johnson. And that division is in need of challengers because right now the top contender behind next week's Henry Cejudo is once again Joseph Benavidez. And with that in mind, the UFC announced this month that they would be holding an open casting call after UFC 197 in Las Vegas next week for the Ultimate Fighter 24, and they were going to be crowning a flyweight challenger to face whomever the champion was at the December finale. Mighty Mouse himself was caught off guard by that announcement because he was not consulted whatsoever. He said,
or even informed.
Even informed. It was fans on Twitch when he was doing a live video game stream, letting him know, and he reacted in real time to that.
I believe the exact quote was from Johnson when he heard he was fighting somebody off the street. I hate you.
that might have been exactly.
I will
yes.
get you back when you throw to me. So just keep that in mind. Queued up, I'm ready to go.
But no, Johnson was very clearly not on board for that idea, saying that he preferred to fight by September rather than waiting till December. And if he beats Cejudo, as he should next week, there's no reason to keep him out, especially when he's not getting paid what he thinks he should be paid in the first place, let alone not consulting him. So it threw things into question a little bit more when the UFC decided to cancel those tryouts, and it's not clear whether or not they're going to stick with that idea for season 24. Rich, do you think there's do you think that's even an interesting conceit for the Ultimate Fighter? Do you think that's something that would have done anything for them or the flyweight division?
Well, I think it's ridiculous that they would get the next title contender off the street. I mean, only in mixed martial arts, only in the UFC. I mean, this would be akin to the Minnesota Wild saying, oh, we don't have Zach Parise, and we're about to face the Dallas Stars. Hey, you at the rink, you want to play? Which admittedly, you know, might be an upgrade.
God, I hate you.
There it is.
I hate you so
much. I was waiting for it.
Sean, your take.
Trying to revive anything with a season of The Ultimate Fighter is laughable. So my take on this whole thing was my take on all things Ultimate Fighter, which is, okay, whatever.
All right, let's...
Still not watch it. I would watch The Ultimate Fighter when they have Faber versus Dillashaw coach against each other. Other than that, I'm not going to watch.
Let's close out with some of the bookings that the UFC has put together for UFC 199, because that card is just about complete at this point with several additions
fights.
This
it's
week.
Complete.
We got
only 13.
The event is coming to the Forum in Inglewood, California on June 4th, headlined by the Luke Rockhold Chris Weidman rematch. Dominic Cruz faces Uriah Faber for a third time for the bantamweight title in the co-main event. We had several fights already announced on the card, including Dustin Poirier against Bobby Green. And this week, several more were added. BJ Penn will be returning to action at UFC 199 to face Dennis Seaver in a featherweight bout, just Penn's second featherweight fight, because the first one went so well for him, right, Rich?
Well, I remember he was going to. I mean, I'm still pissed off at Edgar for pulling out of that fight.
Penn's return comes despite accusations of a sexual assault that his former BJPenn.com editor alleged happened against that man's girlfriend.
To be fair, he saw it.
Despite any good judgment.
I was going to say, to be fair, he saw this somewhere else and then went.
Oh, man. Despite the fact that a police report was filed, no charges were ever brought against Penn. And at this point, with that in mind, and the UFC's infamously stringent and completely exhaustive investigations, they cleared BJ Penn to return, so he's fighting Dennis Seaver on June 4th. Jessica Penne returns for the first time since getting slaughtered by Joanna Jędrzejczyk to face Jessica Andrade, who drops down from bantamweight. She's
talk about repeating one's fate.
She's dropping down two weight classes for this fight, so the
winner gets Letourneau.
The former bantamweight is fighting the former atomweight at 115 pounds.
So this is going to be much like a
well.
Yeah, this is going to be a smaller version of the Cyborg fight.
It might be. Brian Ortega, undefeated featherweight, is going to try to make everyone in the MMA world like him more by beating Clay Guida. John McDessie fights Meji Baghdad, Kevin Casey against Elvis Mutapchik, Sean Strickland against Tom Breeze, Evan Dunham against Leonardo Santos, Jonathan Wilson against Luis Henrique da Silva, Polo Reyes against Dong Young
the
Kim.
Other.
The other Dong Young Kim. And then
Maestro.
As reported today, Dan Henderson against Hector Lombard. Sean, any thoughts on that card as it lines up, given it's essentially the forget about it, we're going to get past this so we can get to UFC 200 card?
Yeah, it's kind of a great card. It's also kind of a, like, you've got some awesome fights on there, and then you've got, wait, Dan Henderson, Hector Lombard? Wait, did
it's
you
so
defend Dennis Evers? Yeah, it's like, there's awesome stuff on there.
Yes.
So, On the whole, I love this card, mostly for Cruz Faber. Green Poirier, and fights like that. And, you know, we're going to see Luke Rockhold destroy Chris Weidman again, so it's going to be fun.
Yeah, this is a weird card. I mean, there's so much awful and so much great on it on the same card. I mean, this is like having to put up with 2 hours of a foot fetish before getting laid, you know?
So a night with Vitor Belfort.
Yeah, I was Rex Ryan, but, you know, this is not yet a all sports podcast yet, so.
All right.
But it's such a hit and miss card. I mean,
yeah.
Like we were saying, Andrade, who, you know, big at 135, you would think, versus Penne, definitely, you know, should be fighting at 105 and, you know, doesn't cut much at all. And then you got, like, Kevin Casey versus Elvis Mastopchik, which is also really weird. And, you know, Tom Breeze, Sean Strickland, and then Dong Hyun Kim, oh, the other one. But then you got Rockhold Wide. Which, if it's a slaughter, is still going to be an entertaining slaughter. Any fight with Dominic Cruz, you know, everybody except Jamie is going to love. You know, you got BJ Penn fighting
up. I hate you so much.
And you got
anyone still listening to this? You
Dan
understand
Henderson and Hector Lombard
that I
which
just
theoretically
hit Rich Hansen,
is a
and
really
I'm going
cool
to
fight
keep
until
talking
you think
over
about and you
his
just realize they're
going
to circle and circle and wait for the other one to throw so that they can throw, and it could be just awful. But then. And you got Poirier versus Bobby in any universe is going to completely kick ass. And you have and then the wild card of Brian Ortega, is he gonna murder Clay Guida or is he gonna disappoint all of his brand new fans? It's just so all over the place.
Yeah. That's yeah.
And if Dennis Seaver wins, then I'm gonna have to quit the sport.
No,
I was gonna,
no,
I
see,
was just gonna make the joke, so
the
I'm,
thing
I'm
is,
glad you got to
can't back a loser.
But you won't because that fight will have never happened in your mind. You
I don't know what you're talking.
You have the little Men in Black wand and erase that from your memory every time that something bad happens with BJ Penn.
Something bad happens with BJ Penn. I don't think he can jump out of a pool anymore.
Probably not a stretch.
I don't think he can roll a boulder underwater anymore. You know, he's going to bring Marv, you know, who's going to work with Jackson. And I, if I'm Max Holloway, I'm
it's going to be a return to form for the motivated BJ Penn.
There's no such thing as a motivated BJ Penn. He doesn't even need to be motivated. I mean, that's such a canard, you know?
I'm just
pissed off that Lyoto Machida is ducking BJ Penn in the rematch by the top. Howard,
I was going to address the absurdity of saying that Max Holloway should be worried about anything with BJ Penn in the same sentence, but since you just invoked Machida ducking Penn, then I'll let that one go.
Don't you love when I trump your own joke before you can even start the joke?
It's par for the course.
If you've stuck with us this long, I appreciate that, and thank you for listening in tonight. I think that's all we have left. I believe that Rich has to leave us as it is, and how can we do this
show
without Rich driving us off the rails and making me just express my hatred for him?
Hey, should have saved last week's podcast instead of just your part of it, Jamie.
Yeah, because that was exactly the plan. Just that was
do
it.
Whatever you can to keep the man down.
Always.
That's what we've got for tonight.
Sorry.
Thank you all for listening in. For Rich Hansen and Sean Ennis, this is Jamie Pennock signing off.